Uncertainty isn't just a challenge, it's a call to adapt. At Tagoras, we help organizations navigate disruption with clarity and confidence. Whether it's making smarter decisions about your portfolio, understanding shifting market dynamics, or identifying new opportunities for growth, we bring deep experience in strategy, market assessment, and lifelong learning. If you're looking to build a more resilient, responsive learning business, we're here to help. Learn more at tagoras.com/clarity.
If you're a leader or an aspiring leader in the business of lifelong learning, you're in the right place. I'm Salisa Steele.
And I'm Jeff Cobb, and this is the Leading Learning Podcast. Hey there, we are back with another gripping must-listen episode of the Leading Learning Podcast. And this time around, we are continuing our efforts to talk to top leaders at organizations, the executives at the top of trade and professional associations, about learning and education and the role that those play in what their organizations do and the value that they offer. And we were actually lucky to be able to talk to, unbelievably, a neighbor of ours here in lovely Carrboro, North Carolina.
That's right. We spoke with Tom Reiser. He's the executive director of the International Society on Thrombosis and Hemostasis. So, you know, just a neighbor down the street, but it's an international society. He shared what they're doing and thinking about in terms of education and learning. And one thing he highlighted that I think is very interesting, that's a little more broad than kind of thinking members or even people in a profession, is he talked about World Thrombosis Day, that they have been instrumental in helping to set up it. That's coming up on October 13th. So I also think that's a very interesting perspective in terms of kind of educating the broader public about an issue that your association deals with.
That is an interesting take on learning and education, and not surprising coming from a guy like Tom. I've always thought he was just a really bright guy. I remember we did some work with him a while back, and he was the first one who reached out to us. And I always consider that a good sign when it's actually an executive who reaches out first. So I'll stop talking because we should just let you and Tom have this conversation and let people learn from Tom. So let's get on with the interview.
This is Salisa Steele with the Leading Learning Podcast, and today I'm talking with Tom Reiser, Executive Director of the International Society on Thrombosis and Hemostasis, which is committed to advancing the understanding and prevention, diagnosis, and treatment of thrombotic and bleeding disorders. And he's a well-seasoned association executive, having led over 10 international medical professional associations in his career. So thank you for joining me today, Tom.
Thank you very much for having me.
And so I did a short little intro about you, Tom, but it would be great if you could tell listeners a little bit more about yourself, if you'd like, and certainly more about ISTH in terms of who you serve and what you do for them.
Yeah, I'm very happy to. So, yeah, as you introduced myself, my name is Tom Reiser. I'm the executive director of ISTH. I've had the pleasure and privilege of working in different parts of the world with many different, primarily medical organizations, in various different disciplines. So I kind of have a feeling I've seen it all. And certainly this topic is particularly important. Learning and education, I think, for organizations like ours is a top priority. The ISTH is, as you indicated, the leading international medical scientific professional society in the bleeding and clotting field, and our focus is really to advance the understanding, prevention, diagnosis, and treatment of thrombotic and bleeding disorders. So that's primarily, but not exclusively, related to thrombosis, blood clots on the clotting side, and hemophilia on the bleeding side. Our members are primarily physicians and scientists who have an interest in bleeding and clotting disorders, but we also count nurses and allied health professionals as our members. The primary medical disciplines represented in ISTH are hematology and cardiology, and at present we have about 4,000 members in over 80 countries. So we're a truly global organization.
Right, living up to that international part of your title.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, because this is the Leading Learning Podcast, and you know, we want to talk some about learning, and you know, you and I had a little bit of exchange prior to the podcast about sort of you know, education versus learning. So I was sort of saying, you know, education is a part of that, but I tend to think of learning as being bigger, you know, and if you think about education as maybe being kind of the more packaged, more sort of prescribed offerings, often kind of what professional development tends to encompass. But I think learning can also be broader than that. It can encompass things like social and informal learning. And also I think that learning tends to put, as you were saying in our earlier exchange, kind of the emphasis on you know, doing, you know, what are you, how are you actually applying or being engaged with that? So, you know, with that kind of broad perspective of learning, you know, of which education is only a part, you know, what do you see as the role of learning and education in the work that ISTH does?
Yeah, very good question. I guess with a mission like our organization has, and many particular medical organizations have, learning overall is critical. And a lot of the things we have done traditionally is actually very learning focused, if you want, with our conferences, our publications, the very traditional things organizations have brought people together and have connected them and have basically contributed to the advancement of a field. Now, more specifically, from an education point of view, I think that more focused approach towards providing different opportunities and platforms and methods to get education across and offer education, that's probably something that has been a bit more recent for organizations to really get into. So for our organization, on the one hand, it is certainly to take this entire learning environment that we have and that our members strive for and need and provide certain platforms and tools so that our members can always stay up to date and on the cusp of the latest developments. And I think so there's a strong alignment between the importance of education and learning that our community wants and needs and what the society can and should provide. And at least that's how we try to see that. So with this said, I think our society has increasingly been focused and made conscious decisions to expand the opportunities to connect the professionals in the field beyond the traditional things. And by doing so, by providing these opportunities for exchange, for learning, for interactions, to help advance the individual careers and the scientific work of our members and of our community, that ultimately advances the field. So I think it's really learning at its best if it's done correctly.
Right. And just to focus into on your organizational strategy, I mean, what role do you see learning playing in that? Sort of how central is it, or you know, how does it support aspects of the overall organizational strategy?
I think this is pretty simple and aligns totally with our mission. If you want to advance the field, you need to advance the individual and the combined contributions to the field. Mm-hmm. So meaning new scientific discovery and their translation into new insights, into new diagnostics, into new treatments. So if we wouldn't do that, and the mission that we talked about in the beginning, we would not be able to achieve that. So the more we can do to provide the field with this in terms of knowledge creation, dissemination, connecting physicians, scientists, and help them actually learn together. If we wouldn't be able to do that, then we would not be able to fulfill our mission. So in that respect, it's very critical to what we do as an organization.
Right, and I think that's true of a lot of associations where there is that underlying educational kind of foundation for a lot of what they're all about and do.
Absolutely.
And I think you touched on this a little bit in what you were saying about, because you were talking about both individual learners and then also sort of just the field in general, you know, and I think that's very interesting, this idea of, you know, your associations and their potential role to not only improve what individuals know, but also to really move the dial in a particular field or arena. And I think that is really interesting. So
you may have already, that may be your answer to this question, but do you have other goals or aspirations for kind of what you're trying to do as an organization with learning? I mean, are there, you know, is there a direction you'd like to go that you haven't quite gotten there yet, or any other sort of, you know, forward thinking ideas for what you would like to try to have learning help you achieve as an organization?
No, I think that's really it. I mean, one can obviously talk about the more, you know, the more logistic aspects of how to best do that and how to know exactly what the needs are and how, you know, who the audience is and so on. And maybe we get to that in the discussion later. But from a big picture point of view, I think the main aspect here as a society, our role is to really individually and collectively to find solutions to unsolved medical diagnostic challenges and ultimately contribute to either preventing illness or better treat an illness. So if we can create an environment that allows to our individual contributors, our community, and therefore the field move in that direction, I think we have achieved our mission.
That's great. And so how do you go about gauging the impact of the education and learning that you offer? I mean, do you, you know, what impact would you like to see learning and education play? And then, you know, how do you try to measure that?
Oh, that's a really, really good question. I would say that at this point, at least, it is a very short-term view that we're taking. And basically, we are aligning ourselves very much with what CME accreditation is increasingly requiring anyway, and that is assess yourself or ask the learner to assess how well a particular education program has met their needs, or do things like self-assessments and self-testing that would show, you know, has this had an impact and how did it go? Obviously, there are things like how many people attended and where are they coming from and who are they and is this the right target audience? But I think the holy grail to a certain degree is really the more long-term systemic difference that you could potentially make in a clinical and laboratory practice. And if you're able to do that and ultimately assess it, then you have really made a full contribution. For us, at least, that's still a bit far away. But I know that this is probably ideally what has to be done.
Yeah, no, I think that's, I agree with you. It's fine to, of course, look at, you know, attendance and the right audience, and you have to do that. But I think I completely agree where the future to me seems to be about really trying to see, okay, how is this being applied? What's the longer term impact? And, you know, because that is where you begin to influence not only individual learners, but the whole field. And then in the case of, you know, the patients in this case as well, and sort of overall health in general.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, in what you're doing at ISTH or potentially at other associations before that, you know, what ahas or insights have you had around learning? And this could be something that's worked really well. I also would welcome any thoughts you might have about something, you know, you tried that didn't work. I think that can also be very powerful to hear.
Yeah. Again, you very, very good question. And certainly something that almost every organization goes through in its approach to learning and education. I think the thing that we have really learned is we have to be extremely clear in the beginning, why are we doing this? Mm. Who is it for? And what specific outcomes do we really want to see? And that really dedicates everything from the selection of the faculty to the type of education to the medium that is utilized to get education across or provide a learning environment for our community. That will also make it easier and more beneficial for the learner to go into it and know exactly what they can expect from it and how they will ultimately benefit. The other one is a very disciplined and structured approach to what is being offered. And what worked actually for us very well, and we rolled this out earlier this year, is we established a core curriculum in our field, a clinical core curriculum, to really address the key competencies that somebody as a specialist in thrombosis and hemostasis should have in different levels. Mm-hmm. And And that has really helped us shape our own approach to providing the appropriate learning environment. And there are certain things that we cover with a webcast from our meeting or a journal publication or a webinar or it's a dedicated e-learning course. So the modules are different, but it allows us to really look at the entire field, the entire learning need, if you want, and then in a very structured way go about filling in this core curriculum with the appropriate educational materials and types of education. Now, we are only in the beginning of this, but it has given us a much better structured view on what we should be doing rather than saying, oh, I have an idea, let's just do this. And you can do that, but it probably will not lead to a very structured approach.
No, I think that sounds fantastic. I think, right, having that curriculum, which basically then serves as the map, you begin to see what you already have and how it fits in. And then it lets you see where you might have gaps and know, okay, that's where we're going to put our time and energy in developing new things to fill some of those gaps or shored up.
Now, the other thing that I want to say is, and this is also critical, I think a disciplined approach is also very important here because obviously if you really do it well, this is a significant investment and you need resources for this. And if you are not really clear on why you're doing this, who it is for, what you want to get out of, and so on, it can very easily lead to a significant drain of your resources. And then probably you're going to face a situation where you may have to make a decision whether you continue or don't continue. And I think it would be particularly disappointing for any organization like ours to go into this direction, invest a significant amount of money, and then basically pull out again because we've just wasted a significant amount of resources.
Mm-hmm. No, I think you're right about having that clarity that the discipline gives you, allows you to focus limited resources, because we all have limited resources. So is there anything that's happening with learning or education now that's exciting to you? This doesn't necessarily have to be at ISTH. It could be in the broader landscape or at ISTH if you'd like.
Frankly, I'm not really on the cutting edge of knowing what's out there and what's going on, and there's so much that changes on an almost daily basis, and some clever people come up with some very innovative ideas. So this is very exciting overall, but that doesn't necessarily mean you have to follow every trend and so on. I think that the most exciting thing for me is to see how learning or education is just becoming more widely available, and how populations that may not have had access to a learning environment now have new ways to become involved with maybe a global community and have access to information and share maybe electronically with others. Now, even in this country, but also in many places around the world, this is still a privilege in some cases and in many cases, so we shouldn't take that for granted. But other than that, technology obviously is huge, and there are many new, very cool ways to engage learners and reshape education. There's a whole science behind how to best educate and learn, so that's exciting. And when anybody who watched Apple's presentation yesterday, again, with new tablets and other devices, I mean, this is all extremely cool. However, I think it shouldn't necessarily distract from the core the core questions. Again, why are we doing this? Who are we doing this for? And at the end, what is the outcome we want to see? What's the best impact this may have? And sometimes a very personal interaction, a discussion with somebody, may actually give you much more education, and you learn much more than watching a fancy video or even gamification on your tablet.
Right. No, I agree that I think it's, you know, these are all tools, you know, these are medium, and we get to use different ones at different times. I don't think one is inherently better more valuable.
And frankly, there's also, I mean, we deal with this on a constant basis as a truly international organization. So we not only have different types of members in our organization in terms of whether you're a scientist or a physician or a hematologist or a cardiologist or a nurse, but we're now talking about different parts of the world that have different access to knowledge and to certain treatments. And then there's this little thing called language and culture that may or may not be, lend itself to certain types of education and learning.
Right. No, as an international organization, it does seem like you have even higher barriers because you have different audiences, right, coming from different cultural contexts. And Well, you know, and part of what your comments have touched on just now is, you know, you've talked about, some of the things that have changed in terms of, technology, access to the internet and things that have, just broadly become more prevalent. And I think as a result of that, people have access to more information, they have more choices. And so in some ways, I think that creates, increased competition for associations. And so I guess I just wanted to ask a question, is ISTH feeling any threat from, competitive or alternative sources of learning? Is that something that you've heard from members or that you're sensing that, okay, they have other choices?
Yeah, absolutely. And personally, I actually... I like it because it really brings a competitive situation. Ultimately, the ultimate goal needs to be that our field advances, and whoever has the best tools to make that happen, the best networks, the best education, will succeed. And so it keeps us on our toes, and it makes us think about how we can do things maybe differently or better. So all of that is, I think, extremely positive. Sometimes, obviously, you start competing with entities that have access to much greater resources, and that might make things a little bit more difficult sometimes. But there's one element that I think ISTH has and many other organizations have. We have an enormous amount of credibility,
right.
And that counts for a lot. I think we are challenged, and we should be challenged, to look at how we make decisions in a more strategic way, how we can make them quicker, how we can define goals better, how we measure results better, and how we turn all of this, as well as new ideas and obviously the needs of the community, into new solutions. And the more efficient and effective we are in doing this, the more successful we will be. But frankly, I mean, I see it very selfishly from an ISTH point of view. We want to be that go-to organization. But if somebody does a better job than we do, we cannot hold the field back just because we haven't gotten our act together. Not to say that we haven't gotten our act together, but so competition is good.
Yeah, no, and I like that perspective that, you take competition not as a threat, but as an opportunity to help you, focus and be even better at what you do put out there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So have you come across some potential solutions to sort of the competition? I mean, have you explored collaborations with other organizations, whether that might be corporations or academia, or are there other solutions that you've tried or that you see as something you'd like to try?
Yeah, we have actually several collaborations with sister organizations, and I think that works very well and is actually, frankly, still underused, not just for us, but also many other organizations, where we are all working with limited resources. So why not try to work together, whether it's offering research grants or combining our e-learning activities, where we can actually not duplicate each other, but actually complement each other and tap into each other's communities. So we are exploring this actually, and we've explored it actually quite successfully and done it quite successfully with related organizations. Corporations, academia, there are some models. I think we haven't really done that too much, although obviously academia is part of what we do in everything, because many of our members in our community are in academia. But there are probably also ways to collaborate there more. Corporations, in our case, that would be, at least the closest one would be our partners in the pharmaceutical, biopharmaceutical, or device or diagnostics field. And there are ways to collaborate. We've done it successfully, but there's obviously always increasingly through to regulations and pharma codes and so on. There's always a hands-off approach, which I think is important to keep. But here again, many of these corporations are looking towards our organization because we provide a level of credibility. And if you find the right model to work together, then it can be actually very positive, and that goes beyond just, hey, please give us $50,000 to fund the course, but it's maybe a platform is being shared or is being provided, or there's help in distributing the content and bringing more people to an organization. So as long as the goals are aligned and very clear in the beginning, I think there are many good opportunities, but I truly think that both we as our society, but the association world in general, has probably still a bit of an opportunity there in looking at collaborations.
Yeah, well, great. I mean, that's good to hear that you've had some successes and that you're still thinking about other ways to mine the collaborations.
Yes.
So, you know, what do you think associations and their leaders need to do to ensure that associations continue to play a strong leadership role in lifelong learning?
Yeah. I mentioned this before a little bit. I think we are really, really challenged to look at this much more strategically and take a bigger view of what the community needs, even beyond just the members. Frankly, when I look at some of our educational activities, we have more non-members join our educational activities than members.
Right.
And we have a much larger non-member community that is engaged with the society. And frankly, I don't necessarily, I want them as members, but the most important thing I believe for us as organizations is to know who our community is and be able to reach it, whether they're members or not. But I think we are really challenged to think much more strategically, really look at the needs, really look at who are we trying to reach and why are we trying to do this, measure the results, learn from that, and ultimately find the right solutions. And if we do that, which is a very normal business approach if you think about it, combine that with the credibility that an organization like ours has, and I think we should be in pretty good shape. Some of our governance functions may have to be looked at as well and see how quickly we can move and how quickly we can react, and ideally be proactive about certain things rather than react. But that's kind of inherent in, I think, the model of an association, that we might move a little bit slower than corporations. But hey, again, it helps us, I think, be more impactful, and that's important.
Right. And so now, on a more personal level, you know, how do you think about your own lifelong learning? How do you keep learning and growing your knowledge and skills and perspective?
I learn a lot on the job on a daily basis. I learn from my team here at ISTH. I learn from our partners. I learn from our leadership. A lot is, as you indicated before, and when you described it, you know, learning is so much more than the formal aspect of it. It's the networking. It's the exchange. It's getting ideas, being challenged, and so on. So that is huge for me. And once I get kind of interested in an area, then I seek the more formal educational avenues, and that may go from the more traditional life interactions at a congress or workshop to online courses. I'm more and more intrigued by, I mentioned this before, gamification, on how you can really make things a lot more interactive and plays out in case scenarios and so on. And I think particularly in the medical field, you can do quite a bit with that. But I think that's it's kind of a mix. The social aspect is tremendously important, and as much as I see technology play more and more of a role, and frankly, all of us are pressed for time and resources, and cannot always travel around the world to attend an interesting conference, for example. So if you have the opportunity to do it at your choosing in an environment that is convenient for you, that only enhances what you can do.
Well, great. So it sounds like a real mix of formal and informal and just a lot of hands-on learning, which is great. We know how effective that can be.
And, you know, curiosity. I think curiosity is something that is critical. I mean, if you're not curious, you will hardly learn. And it's, as I said, a lot. It's not like I'm not necessarily looking to learn, but I just, you know, you're in a situation, you start to, you know, absorb it and you try to connect the dots. I think that's the fun part.
No, I think you're right. There's it's not always clear necessarily exactly how something you're doing is going to translate into an answer to something down the road, but very often it does. It's just because I think that fundamental underlying curiosity that keeps your eyes and ears open, and then at some point you start connecting the dots, as you said.
Exactly.
So, you know, just to wrap up here at the end, Tom, you know, what are the best places for people to find out a little bit more about ISTH?
Oh, thank you for asking. So the best way to find out about this, and the easiest way is you go to our website, www.isth.org, and you will get hopefully a pretty good view of our organization, what we do, our various programs and so on. And we also have an ISTH Academy that is really focused. It's kind of our learning portal, and that's very exciting. I would like to take the opportunity to make you and also the listeners aware of a very, very important public awareness campaign that our society has launched only last year, and that we are extremely proud of, and that is World Thrombosis Day. And with World Thrombosis Day, which is held actually every year on October the 13th, so it's actually just coming up in a month from now, we want to raise global awareness of thrombosis, which is potentially deadly blood clots. What we want to do here is raise awareness about the causes, the risk factors, signs and symptoms, evidence-based prevention and treatment. If you imagine that worldwide 1 in 4 people actually die from causes related to thrombosis, this is a really very serious health issue. And we're focusing on venous thromboembolism and particularly hospital-associated VTE this year. And there's an enormous amount of information that we should be knowing, particularly when we go into certain situations. And so I hope everybody's going to take the opportunity, go to www.worldthrombosisday.org, become involved in the global campaign. I bet you if you start asking around in your among your family and friends, unfortunately somebody has had some sort of a problem with a blood clot, and hopefully they're still alive, but it's highly preventable in many cases, and therefore we hope that our campaign really helps in saving literally millions of lives.
Wow, yeah, no, that sounds great. And so you had just the second annual this year then on October 13th. Well, great.
Exactly. Look out for us. We have over 200 partner organizations in almost 80 countries by now working with us and trying to raise awareness in their local communities. And as I said, this can hit very close to home very quickly.
Wow. Well, thank you for sharing that. And thank you very much for your time. For speaking with me today, Tom.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
So that wraps up our interview with Tom Reiser. And if you would like to get some show notes for this episode, which includes play-by-play and also some resources to go along with the actual audio, you can go to leadinglearning.com/episode7. And as always, and if you've been listening for a while, you know we're going to ask you this. While you're there, please subscribe to the podcast if you're getting value out of it. We like to see that the people are actually connecting and listening week in and week out, and subscribing is one of the main ways you can do that.
And this is where we will also repeat our plea to take a minute to give us a rating on iTunes. You can go to leadinglearning.com/iTunes. We really appreciate ratings. It does make a difference in helping others to find the podcast.
And definitely share the podcast. If you need to walk outside right now and just shout it around a bit, you can do that. But a much easier way is just to go to leadinglearning.com/share, and that will magically populate a tweet for you to send out to your legions of followers. And if tweeting isn't your thing, you can take the same text that we use there and put it into LinkedIn, put it into Facebook, whatever your network of preference is. But please help spread the word.
So thank you again for listening, and we'll see you next time on the Leading Learning Podcast.